everyone. Welcome back to Mixed Coffee. I said mixed this time instead of mix. I don't know if that's correct.
Get your name straight for our podcast, Judy.
I'm sorry.
You know, it's even harder now because me and Judy are doing it in the evening, and so we don't even have a coffee.
That's true.
I don't have coffee because I've been sick, so I have tea.
Although, so I don't think mixed coffee has very much caffeine. It doesn't really do anything for me.
Depends what kind you get.
That is true.
I got one from Kanu, which is Kong Yu's coffee. Anyway, it was Americano.
Americano.
Chua, chua.
It tasted chua. Not quite joa, like kind of kanyang. Tasted more like, yeah, just
you know. Mm-hmm. Average cup of joe.
Average cup.
Not even, you know.
But do you guys drink it so that you keep yourself awake?
Not really.
Right.
Sometimes. Usually it's more of a habit, but sometimes I'll be like, you know what, I'm extra tired, so I'm going to have another cup.
Well, I drink coffee to keep myself awake, but mixed coffee, that's an act of desperation.
Why do we call ourselves mixed coffee if we don't have nice things to say about mixed coffee?
That's a very good question.
Well, we had a reason. We had a reason. I just don't remember what it is.
Because I guess it was sort of, it felt like it had to do with Korea, mm-hmm. and we have to do with Korea in our talks.
I don't know if we necessarily talk about Korea because we want to talk about Korea. It's just, I guess, a common factor.
Well... If you want to get philosophical, like mixed coffee, it's not always good for you, but sometimes you crave it, and it tastes good. It's not always the best coffee, but, you know, you get some good stuff out of it. It's a mix. It's
Are you like enabling good and bad. People's addictions?
I'm highly enabling people
okay,
to do
okay.
things that are not good for you.
Don't do that. People, do not do things that are bad for you. But
in moderation... Sweets are okay.
Okay. Well, this is very far off from the discussion that we have for today. Drum roll. Multitasking. I mean, do you guys multitask? Let me just ask this.
Is there a way to not?
I heard it's not physically possible. You're just flipping back and forth between two tasks at very high speed.
But what is the actual definition of multitasking? Is it just like moving quickly back and forth between tasks and getting them done quickly? Or is it like doing multiple things at the exact same time?
I guess it depends on what you define it for yourself. But if you define it as in actions, you can do certain actions at the same time. So for example, I sometimes watch something. I play on my phone and I can possibly talk to someone. But the thing is that if you define multitasking as a brain function... then your brain can only focus on one thing at a time. Mm. It's just that you can change. So brain-wise, yeah. You cannot multitask. But you can change at a very, very, very fine periods of time in between the tasks. And that's why people think they're multitasking.
I know. I'm not good at multitasking. I can't focus on more than one thing at a time.
It depends what I'm multitasking. If it's like errands, like cleaning around the house, I like, you know, that I'll have the floor drying from mopping while I'm also going to this other room to dust and then like listening to music while I'm doing that or on the internet for like budgeting purposes or something. Like when I'm doing errand stuff, I like doing it mm-hmm. quickly. I like doing a lot at once because I feel a lot of fulfillment when I get things done that way. But as Ali said, if it's on my phone while watching television, that's like putting two similar things together, and then that's even harder to do at the same time because both, like, one requires a lot of attention. So if you try to do both, it doesn't make sense.
Right. So I guess you can just say that multitasking can be done, let's say, two actions if one of them do not require full attention, because you can, for example, take a walk and talk to someone, but you don't really have to pay attention to your walking. Unless it's a very bumpy road, so you can. Therefore, you're not going to be able to listen to the other person mm-hmm. very well. So it's mm-hmm. very fuzzy, right? So I find that very interesting, like multitasking. And we're going to further talk about how we have so much information overload. So our brain is kind of forced to multitask, but it can't possibly do it. But let's just start, as we do, with a trivia.
Ooh. Exciting.
Thank you for the drum rolls.
10 p.m. I mean, trivia, I'm ready.
These are questions, let me just say out of the bat, that they're pretty technical, and it's okay if you get them wrong. It's just that they're very interesting to know. How many bits of information can our brain process at one time? At most 3, 10, 5, or 7.
Ooh, all of those are bigger numbers than I expected.
It's bits of information, remember. It's not one full activity, right?
3.
I wanted to say 3 too. Now that you say that, I feel like I should pick something else.
You don't have to.
No, make it fun. Pick something else.
What was the next smallest option?
The next smallest is 5.
I don't know about 5, but I'll pick it just for fun.
You don't like 5?
I just don't think it's that much. But maybe I'll be surprised. Okay, I'll say 5.
Well, you're both wrong. It's 7.
7? Wait, when you say bits of information, is that like an example?
I will read out of the book for you, so just hold on.
What book is this?
I will tell you about it after the trivia.
Okay.
So that's
all.
Leslie's impatient.
I'm exercising your patience right now, Leslie. Okay, number 2. How much information can one human retain in one lifetime? And one lifetime is taken as the average of 70 years.
Ooh.
We have 100 billion, 200 million, 90 million, or 185 billion.
Huh? Sorry. Could you repeat that?
Yes. 100 billion bits, 200 million bits, 90 million bits, 185 billion bits.
The second one. I want to say the second one.
What was the third option?
90 million.
I like that one.
Okay. You're both wrong again.
Is it the billions?
It's the highest number. It's 185 billion bits of information.
I can't even think of 185 billion.
What is a bit of information?
That's what I want to know.
How do you quantify that?
Like a word? Is a word a bit of information?
No, it's like visual cues, audio cues.
Well, if you think about everything you've ever like seen or heard or known, I guess it could be that much.
And then this is more relaxed question. So video captions help increase retention by how much? 33%, 56%, 42%, or 60%?
Like subtitles?
Audio, video, and writing.
I want to say, was it 56%? The second one?
42 is the meaning of life, so I will choose that one.
Okay. Judy was right, actually. It's 56%, so it's a significant number.
Significant, but not enormous.
Well, good for me. I watch pretty much everything with subtitles.
I do too.
Even when I watch English things now, I'm like, but where are they? Because I'm so used to watching something with subtitles. And it's hard for me because my brain doesn't want to listen anymore. So I don't know. I actually feel like I'm stupider because I'm like, I need subtitles so I know what they're saying.
That's the thing. Like, because I use subtitles as well. But I feel like I don't listen anymore. Like, I just read and I can't, listen anymore or see because I'm just looking at the subtitles, so I can't take the other cues.
Is that also true when you listen to, Korean? Like, when you don't know the language, you still don't listen?
Yeah. Even when I do know the language, I still can't listen.
My attention does go more to what I'm seeing, which are the captions. Most things are pretty hard to hear clearly without captions.
But I think I rely too much on subtitles sometimes.
Yes. I want to, strengthen my Korean skill. And actually, I already understand a lot of what's going on when I watch shows or movies. Mm-hmm. But I don't realize how much I understand until the subtitles, freeze or they don't work. And then I'm like, oh, actually, this is okay. Because I stop listening as much when I'm reading.
Yeah.
And so I don't realize that I could take more in than I am. Yeah. Mm-hmm. But I just, stop paying attention.
So what I do now is listen, if I watch something, I try to watch it with Korean subtitles. Because sometimes there are words that I might not pick up audio, but I can pick them up by subtitles and vice versa.
That's a good idea.
Now, to answer Leslie's questions, on why I had this trivia in the first place. So a couple of years ago, I bought this book. It's called Flow, The Psychology of Optimal Experience. So I picked up this book and I thought it was interesting. And so I bought it, but I didn't really read it. That's what I do with books in general. But I picked it up last month and again, and I kind of read the first chapter. And it's not the whole book that I want to talk about. It's just the something that I found very interesting by reading it. Let me just explain what flow is. To take the definition mm-hmm. from the book, is the state in which people are so involved in an activity that nothing else seems to matter. So the experience itself is so enjoyable that people will do it even at great cost for the sheer sake of doing it, not for like a gain or anything else. So this mm-hmm. would be the definition. And I think it's really much related to the concept of multitasking, because as we said in the beginning, we can only focus fully on one thing and one thing only. Another thing that really sparked my interest while reading is the fact that we are very, like, our brain is very selective with the information that we get. And although we have so much information, I mean, this book was written like a long time ago and we have a lot more stimuli now, but our brain is not able to take everything in, right? So that's why we can only retain how much? 185 billion bits of information.
Yeah, so small.
Yeah. So I'm gonna read from the book like one short-ish paragraph to explain what the trivia. So it seems that we can manage at most 7 bits of information, such as differentiated sounds or visual stimuli or recognizable nuances of emotion or thought at one time. And that the shortest time it takes to discriminate between one set of bits and another is about 1/18th of a second. So very, very quick. By using these figures, one concludes that it's possible to process at most 125 bits of information per second, or 7,560 per minute, or almost 500,000 per hour. Over a lifetime of 70 years and counting 16 hours of waking time each day, this amounts to about 185 billion bits of information. So it sounds like a lot, but it's not. And it's also like it's very conditional on like 70 years, 16 hours of waking. And like it's different from person to person, but overall, it's not much. What do you guys think?
Doesn't sound like not much, but I guess I think about how much I remember. Not very much.
Imagine it's for 70 years.
That's true.
I think I want to live a bit longer, so it doesn't apply to me.
I'm glad for you, Leslie.
Average nowadays is like 100. Yeah, I don't have a lot of memories or things I remember from like my early childhood, so I guess all those years are gone.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know exactly what is taken into account because it's very technical if you go very much into detail, but I just picked it up as a very interesting start point for the discussion, especially now with all the technology and everybody being so much online. Mm-hmm. There's just so much information and stimuli that our brain has to catch up on. And I guess because our brain has to overwork, we get so exhausted. Like, I get exhausted more if I spend all day on my computer or my phone or on the internet than mm-hmm. if I don't know, been outside walking all day.
I don't really mind that mm-hmm. we don't remember things and stimuli. I like having a lot. It does get overwhelming, but this isn't just like social media, because you can curate social media to just your friends, or you can curate social media things that you only enjoy, or even bring you peace. Mm-hmm. You can do that. But in daily life, I don't remember the boring days, but I remember the exciting days. And mm-hmm. I remember even if it's exciting online sometimes. Mm. But I don't remember the boring days often. Like, I have to make an effort to really try. So I like social media. I like that it gives me kind of a jolt. And it's like, hey, you're living a life. Don't forget that. I'm like, oh, yeah. Like, I can go and do things and I can meet people and see things and create. And like, I can do too much of that. But I can also do not too much of that if I'm being careful.
But do you think like social media helps you in a way, or it's just good that it's there?
No, I think it's really helpful. I think it can be, if there's a thing in the world that can be bad or good. And social media covers such a large amount of things these days too, and it's here to stay. And so sometimes when I feel that people think, just speak badly about it, and then I feel guilty for being on it, it's like, well, am I not going to be on it? Because sometimes I'll have friends who decide they're not going to be in social media anymore, and I completely lose touch with them because I don't know what they're up to anymore, and I can't contact them on those platforms. And sometimes they move away, and then it's just like, okay, well, I don't know how to talk to you anymore. Like, it's kind of difficult, because even if you message them right away and you're just like, hey, how are you? I've been thinking about you. Like, there's not a lot of meaning to me. It doesn't feel like, because you have nothing to talk about. You don't know what's been going on, and it takes a lot of extra time. So that's me, like, harping on, like, we need social media to keep up with people. But I like social media and the inspiration I get from it. And how excited it can make me about going out and doing things that I want to do.
I like the fact that, Leslie, we are both the same and at the same time still very different, because I agree, but I disagree as well. I mean, I'm not against the social media, and there are so many benefits that I get from social media, as you said, like creativity, keeping up with people. But I also have a friend who doesn't use social media, and she hasn't for years. And I honestly don't have a problem with that, because we keep in touch, and I agree. Some people actually see and preach about this, that social media has bereaved us from our intentionality in relationships, because it's so easy to see someone's feed and just click on it, and I can maybe leave a comment, and that's not bad, but I think that it's not as intentional, and it's not as... It's not that it's not authentic, but it's, as you said, like, on social media, you don't see everybody, like, everything that that person, like, has been through. And if it's your friend, you want to, like, have conversation and know about their life. So I think just keeping up with friends that don't really use social media, for me, I just call them or have video talks. And I think that's beautiful, because they get to tell me what is going on. And I get to tell them what is going on, because they're not on Instagram and they cannot see my stories and my posts. But now I don't say it's bad. It just takes, for me, in my opinion, it takes this intentionality in a relationship with people. But it does. It's easy, though, as you mentioned, with people that are very far away, it's easier to keep in contact with them.
I feel like I understand both of your points of view. Social media it's complicated, because it used to be, like, kind of what you said, Leslie, like a way of connecting with people, like people we know, our communities. Like, that's how Facebook started. It was meant to be a community for specific people who were already kind of within the same vicinity. But now it's like it connects you to the world. And now it doesn't just connect you to people. It connects you to advertisers, to products. And I think the commercial aspect is actually what I have a bigger problem with. Just personally, because, like, I'm not that hugely stimulated by content. Like, for example, the only platform that I really use nowadays is Instagram. But for me, Instagram is a very, like, if we go back to the multitasking thing, it's a very brainless activity. I don't really go on it to be stimulated by information. And I think part of that is because, like, I know that I get overstimulated and I don't like that. So I purposely don't really use Instagram to obtain information. Like, I don't really follow a lot of accounts or, like, read posts with, like, a lot of writing. I mostly just go for visual inspiration, and connecting with people, just keeping up with what they're up to. Like, I do agree that it makes it, like, it allows you to be less intentional with certain people, which I do think can be an issue. But at the same time, what I think has become a problem for me is, like, overstimulation also in just in terms of social interaction. Because, you know, I have things like KakaoTalk. I have messaging apps, and with the people that I do want to stay connected with, like, there is still a level of intentionality. But I think, I don't know, just the busier life gets, and I think people say this more as they, like, have families and stuff, it's not possible to stay in touch with every single person that you know. And at some point, you're going to come to a place where you understand, like, who you're close to, who you're not close to or who you want to keep that sort of distance in terms of, not because I don't like you, but just because we don't have the capacity to have deep, intimate relationships with everyone. But because of social media, it feels like there's so many people in our lives. And honestly, there's even just a lot of people we meet, like, at church. Like,
yeah.
So many people we meet at church every week. But it's like, I can't have those deep, intimate relationships with all of them because there's just
right.
not enough time and energy for that. Like, we are relational beings. Like, we're made to be relational beings, but that's not the only thing that we do. Mm-hmm. Anyways, yeah, I think that's why there was a time where I felt like I shouldn't use social media, but now I think that I'm at a place where, like, it's not, I still use it, and I know that it's kind of mindless, but it is sort of a way for me to turn my brain off between, like, activities, especially, like, at work or doing things that actually do require my brain. Mm-hmm. And that's why I do multitask a lot when I'm on social media. Like, when I'm scrolling through Instagram or, like, looking at people's stories or whatever, it's usually, like, when I'm, I don't know, like watching something in the background or, like, just kind of like a mental break. I guess that is sort of an activity that you can do, but it means, like, I just don't invest myself and my brain as much into it. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, that reminds me. I'm talking a lot. But I just wanted to mention this one point. I like Sherlock, and Conan Doyle talks about this method that Sherlock uses called the Mind Palace.
And mind what?
Because he calls the Mind Palace.
Because
he calls his brain an attic.
Mm-hmm.
And in the attic, there's like boxes, and the boxes represent like storage of information.
Mm-hmm.
But it's like when it gets cluttered with too much information, he needs to clear some of it out.
Mm-hmm.
To get important information.
Mm-hmm.
So I do the same with my brain. Like, I purposely don't store information that I know will not be important.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, like, I just gotta, like, get stuff out of there. Like, because I know I can't retain everything.
I think I've heard of this concept of brain decluttering. Mm-hmm. Some people do it without knowing. I mean, it's a natural thing for some people, and for me it's not, for example. So if I were mm-hmm. to do it, I will have to, like, be very intentional. I can't do it. I have to, like, exercise this.
Your brain, I think, does get rid of things. It doesn't bring things to mind, like, puts them, like, files them away, because it helps you in your present if you're not mm-hmm. constantly feeling like you're just as stimulated as you were in some past circumstance. And that's a blessing in some ways, because if something big happens and you change countries, or some big, like you divorce somebody and, like, your life changes, you do over time, like, get used to mm-hmm. the new life, and you start to forget things, or at least it's not in the forefront of mm-hmm. your mind. It's a way for you to just keep moving forward, even if it's not a bad thing that happened in the past, but just mm-hmm. like, oh, here's mm-hmm. a change. So I'm not constantly feeling like I remember all the things that happened mm-hmm. before in crystal clear, like HD. If it mm-hmm. starts to fade into the past, you can focus on, like, what's mm-hmm. happening in the present more. So I think it's a good thing, but also, like, you have to be careful. If you're like, oh, someday I'll write my memoir, but not right now. It's like, well, write it now, because, like, you're going to forget everything, or at least make a lot of notes.
I agree. And I guess that's why just processing things help you not accumulate trauma whenever something mm-hmm. happens in your life. Because we're constantly in a constant change. And if we're just so heavily influenced by each change that happens in our life, we're just gonna not be able to focus in on the present. But the author says that because we're so constantly charged on with so much information, we have to get our intentions straight, and be careful with the environment that we're in, like, just be very intentional. Mm-hmm. I have used this word so much today. I'll take a shot whenever I say intentional. So you have to be very intentional with the information that you're letting your brain absorb. A part of this chapter that I wrote, he talks about consciousness and how that is very important when you store information. And that's, I guess, a very important part of the state of flow. I guess people would call it hyperfocus. Is when you focus so much on something that nothing else distracts you. And you're able to just, I don't know, make a paper in one day if you paper focusing. Yeah, if you paper focus,
paper focus,
you can write paper a paper focus. In a day. I should paper focus this semester. Okay, yeah. But what do you think about that? Do you think it's possible for us to just be so intentional with information that we let our brains retain?
I think so. Sometimes my fear is like I let so many things kind of like wash over me. I worry that things that I learn or things that are said to me don't have very much impact.
I think I intentionally try to forget things that I don't like. Like my life can be, I kind of like slice it up into chunks. I don't like the word chunks, but I used it. Because like there are some like transitions that happened. Mm-hmm. Sometimes I really liked the transition and sometimes I did not. And so like there's a whole year where I just like, I remember it, but not well. Because I don't care about it. I don't want to remember it. I don't really care. Mm-hmm. And also, you know, I didn't do a whole lot. So I don't look at it fondly. I didn't take a lot of pictures. Mm-hmm. I was just like, I didn't really like it. And when I look back on Korea, I feel like I want to remember everything. And that's partly because I had a good time, partly because a lot of times I didn't have a good time. But I wanted to remember like all those feelings, because for me it feels like it was really important, like how I felt as a foreigner feels like it's an important thing to like digest. Mm-hmm. What feelings did I have? Why did I feel that feeling? Why was I angry in that circumstance? Is that all right? What does it mean for me to be here? What am I experiencing right now? What is this like? What kind of story is this saying? So to me, everything I did in Korea was like, I need to remember everything. But there are other periods of my life where I'm just like, meh. Oh no, I'll think about that if I have to. I'm just like not interested.
But most people, I don't think they are like, oh, I should remember this moment. I should remember what I'm feeling, what I'm seeing, what I'm hearing, everything. I guess as an anthropologist, when you go to a place, a specific place, a specific community, you go with that intention in mind. But when you live your life, I don't think you do that. Maybe we should, yeah. I guess we should remember our life in general, like, it's what defines us, right? Even the good days, the boring days, the bad days.
Yeah. Well, I want to remember things, but honestly, like, even the good days, it's not as good as just living it in the moment. It felt really good in that moment, but now it's, like, a different time. And, you know, I think that I realize more that I am more present focused than past or future. And there are ups and downs to that. It's very easy for me to leave things behind me. I forget a lot of things. And it's not because they were bad. They were, like, good moments. And sometimes I miss those times. But when I try to, like, relive that in my head, I realize it's just not the same. And I can't go back to those moments. And it's sometimes more painful to think about it. It's nostalgia, knowing that I can't go back.
I don't think... Like, nostalgia is not necessarily a bad feeling.
Nostalgia does kind of have that feeling of longing attached to the word. More like reminiscing might be. It's like, oh, let's talk about the past. Oh, that was good. And then you move on.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it depends if you have like a longing feeling attached to nostalgia or just a reflective feeling attached to it. Because you can get caught in the past, right? If your longing is so strong.
Like, I used to want to go back to the past and relive it. And then I realized that not everyone was as nostalgic as me. And other people moved on. But I think I just got used to just living in whatever space I was now and realizing that those moments, they were good. They were behind me.
Do you think that it's necessarily bad to, like, relive past moments?
I don't think it's bad, but it does hurt when it feels like you're the only one who wants to go back to that. And everyone else around you sort of seems okay with moving on. Like, they don't really seem to care about the past.
Okay.
Can I share a poem? It's only three lines because I like short poems.
Yes.
The evening haze, thinking of past things, how far they are. It's, yeah.
The evening haze, thinking of past things, how far they are. Yeah, so sometimes I guess it depends on the memory and how you reflect on it, but for me, the more I reflect on something, the more I realize things, the more I can process it. It's not the same with all memories. Like, sometimes you need help, and that's why you go to counseling. But most of the times, when I think back at stuff, it's like that poem that you just read, Leslie. You think of that, and like, oh, I'm so different from how I was then. I grew so much. Like, I'm so far from there.
Yeah.
I've come so far.
Yeah.
And it's interesting to see, like, thinking back, even in childhood, like, I had these dreams, and now look at me now. You know? Some, maybe I've achieved some. Mm. Maybe I'm working on some. But it's, like, so interesting to see just how we evolve.
I would not want to go back to childhood or any part of my life. I like getting older and becoming wiser. I think my big thing these days is, like, I think of things I used to believe, and I'm like, that was so silly. Why did I believe that? And so I'm like, I can't wait till I keep getting older, and I keep thinking, like, finding, I guess, like, not perfecting, but, like, honing my thinking skills and my opinions, and also when to hold back my opinions or let go of opinions. Like, I'm excited for that, those kinds of changes. So that makes me happy to get older.
Oh, I remember what I was going to say. I think it's because I'm not very self-reflective. I'm not reflective in general. I like to do things, but I don't like to stop and think. And that's kept me from processing some things. And I think also kept me from being as aware as I could be of myself, but also of others. I can be very aware of my, like, emotions, my current state, and, like, what I'm feeling and why I'm feeling it. But then when it comes to, like, you know, getting even more meta and, like, okay, well, why is that the case? What similar feelings have I felt in the past? It's all like, ooh. I don't do a lot of reflecting, collecting and organizing my thoughts.
Oh, all the time, every day, I feel like I want to collect things. I remember thinking once, like, why is it that when I talk to somebody, it'll be like 10 minutes of talking, and then I'll spend like an hour thinking about it? And not in like, how could I have said that kind of way, but just in a like, what did that mean? Like, how did I feel? What were they feeling? I'm just like very, I like to think about this, and I like to talk about it. I like to talk about our experiences and our like deep inner thoughts. Like, that's my favorite conversation. So that can, like, even people I know really well, if they don't have the same personality, that throws them off, because they also throw me off, because, like, why are you willing to talk about, like, today things? Like, what are you doing? Like, or I don't know, like, funny stories. It's like, I'm not that interested. I love organizing all of my thoughts and things. Like, some of my favorite moments were when I would just, like, stop and be, like, just thinking about what happened recently and spend an hour or so doing that. I love that. I'm like an old lady.
I wish I had that skill. I feel like it is a skill, because for me, I need conversations like this. I need to be stimulated. When I'm on my own just trying to think, I can't rat, like, my thoughts won't, there's a Korean phrase, can't kulo, like, around my brain. Like, I just try to think and nothing comes up. But then when I start talking to people, I'm like, oh yeah, that reminds me of this. Like,
which is why I go on social media.
I understand. For me, social media is not necessarily good in that aspect. Because I am the same, Julia. I'm also a verbal processor. And by verbal, I mean, like, spoken and written. So, social media doesn't really help me unless I express it myself. Like, I put it down in words. So just scrolling on Instagram does not help me, like, figure things out.
Maybe that's why we like to create content rather than just consume it.
Can I ask a question?
Yeah, of course.
Mm-hmm.
Have any of you guys experienced flow?
I think so. Usually when I'm writing, if it's a good day, then I really won't want to stop until, you know, everything's just juiced out of my brain.
Yeah, I did. It's not very often. It's very, very hard for me to tap into that. It's mostly when I analyze a text, like when I read something and try to, like, make sense of it on my own. So I write ideas down. That started to happen, like, recently, and I do go into paper focus as sometimes when I'm pressed by time. It's very easy to go into hyper focus, like flow. But I also sometimes and it's something that I really enjoy, and I wish I would go into flow with it more often, is studying the Bible. Like, sometimes I just study a few chapters at a time. And I'm like, oh, when did I study 10 chapters of Genesis in a few hours?
I guess flow would be a good measure of what you're passionate about.
Yeah, yeah. What about you, Leslie?
I would say writing, except a lot of my writing in the past has been papers. And I'm like you, Allie. I get so much anxiety because I love writing, but the entire time I'm thinking, like, what does this professor want? Because I never know. And I feel like I don't have enough information. I feel like there's a lot of, like, unsaid things and expectations, and that I have a personality that just, like, freaks out about that kind of stuff. So I will spend more time trying to perfect the citations because I'm not quite sure what citations they want me to use. And, like, I will try to perfect the grammar because I think they really care about grammar. And so, like, writing can be less fun for me because I'm so worried about my audience. But if I'm not worried about my audience, I'm much better at writing. Like, if I'm just like, this is for me. And if I think it's good at the end, maybe I can share it with who knows, whatever. But right now it's for me. And then that will come easily. But if it's something where I don't focus on myself, like reading can be really good flow for me. I will spend hours and hours and hours just reading, and I get lost in the concepts. If it's like an article, or I get lost in the story, if it's a story. I haven't read stories in a while, but
I haven't read in a while.
I noticed I do go into flow with fiction. However, with nonfiction, for some reason, I have this need to write down concepts and my ideas on them, and it's not so relaxing anymore to read nonfiction. Like, I don't just read without making notes and everything.
The fallacy of the PhD. It's like, I went in here because I love to read and I love these concepts, and then you start to be like, but like, it's not fun anymore because everything's for like a goal.
It's not fun anymore when you start to nitpick everything. Like, I can't just enjoy this book and the concepts that it's talking about. I have to actually make sense of them so I can use them maybe in the future.
You have to think like, oh, how is this paper lacking? And so that I can put in my paper. Like, others have talked about this and this and this, but there is a hole in the studies. Or like, what is the word that we usually use? A gap. There's a gap in the research in this, and here, I will fill it in this paper anyway. You have to, like, think that way when you're reading other people's work.
Oh, I'm a bad researcher. I just think of what I want to say and then just find whatever evidence I can. In my major, writing what your professor doesn't want is what your professor wants.
I should have been a literature major.
Change it quick.
Change it. Go back.
Research is ultimately for the public, not for the professor, right?
Right. I mean, I don't know how the conversation got to this part. I feel like we're just doing research methodology. I feel like I'm just listening to my courses from last semester again. Like, this gives me anxiety.
We're multitasking.
Sorry.
We're talking about many subjects at once.
You can't talk about many subjects at once, Allie would say. You can only do one thing at a time.
But we can. We can if each of us talk about a different subject.
And then this podcast will definitely not make sense.
I don't know, maybe artists will be like, oh, it's wonderful, like, we're all talking about different subjects at once. They're like, it is a metaphor for living in this interconnected world or something.
Why just get one subject out of an episode when you can get three? Three.
She makes a point.
What a great deal.
I mean, we should try. We should all just write our own monologue and just read it out at the same time and let people just
criticize.
They will not get what we're saying, I'm pretty sure.
100 billion bits of information.
We started from multitasking, we end up talking about research papers.
I think subconsciously, even though we think we're going off topic, I think subconsciously, because we know what we started with and what we want to talk about, there is something like guiding us back.
If anyone who listens has any idea how we ended up here, please leave a comment.
Please draw a diagram and send it to us.
So we talked about so many things today, but going back to the original topic of flow and multitasking, we mentioned that it's the state of being so focused into on one action that we are hardly distracted, and how we can be intentional with what information we let our brains retain over our life. But do you guys have any like ending thoughts?
It's not a thought, but more of an experience with flow. You know, I said I experience flow in my writing. What I found really cool is when I enter that state and then I come out, and I realize, like, I was inspired by something, but I don't really know what. Usually, like, some conversation or something that someone said. But then when I put all the ideas together and I think about what kind of story I'm writing, or, like, why I'm inspired to write a character in this way, I realize a lot of it subconsciously is a telling of my own story, or it's something that I experienced that I'm trying to process. Mm. And I think it's because writing is a way that I process for me, but I didn't realize it was. I was like, oh my gosh, I'm actually just talking about me.
It was me all along.
In the end, it was all me.
That's what my gravestone will say. It was me.
Nice. Nice.
We think we're so inspired, you know, by external things. But maybe it just, sometimes maybe they just inspire something that's already in us.
Yeah, humans are vast. Like, we have so much in us, and different experiences and different places and people will bring out those parts of ourselves. So I don't think it's a loss if you just stay in one place and you don't meet new people and stuff. Like, that's a good life. But I know that when I was abroad, I they brought out lots of different things in me. And when I'm back home, it brings out different things in me. And so I like to also process that, think about that, work through that, and be like, who, like, you know, I am vast. Like, isn't this cool? And like, other people I talk to, they are vast. Like, they have so much going on. Like, they have like so much muchness. Yeah.
Muchness.
I guess to sum up what you guys, both of you said, is that we need a sequence of overload of stimuli followed by a more relaxed environment so we can process things. And that's how we retain the bits of information, I guess. Thank you guys for listening to another weird conversation, but very insightful. I hope you guys enjoyed it. This was Mix Coffee.
This is Mix Coffee. Bye-bye.
Bye.
And it's okay to have different opinions. Like, look at this conversation, right? And we're still friends. Like, people should be assured that we're okay with each other having different opinions.
Okay, but Allie's okay, but me, oh my gosh.
Oh my god, Leslie, all this time?
This is it. This is the end.
Okay, we should wrap up before we...
Yeah, I need actually... to eat food.
Before we go off.
It's like 11 where you are, so this conversation can only get weirder.